Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Welcome to Webcology here on WMR.fm. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls.
Hi, everybody.
And for the record, the show is being recorded on Monday, the 27th of July. We normally recorded this on Thursday, the 23rd. But, well, let's just say Christine had a website blow up on her. And the first responsibility of an ethical SEO. Okay, it wasn't Christine's website. Christine didn't have a website blow up under her. It blew up on her. Somebody else was working on the website, and she's the SEO, the website designer, did the website designer and developer stuff. And anyway, the most ethical thing to do is drop everything and not do anything until the problem is fixed, because that's what an SEO does. And how are you doing, Christine?
I'm good. I had a good weekend playing games, two game nights. So that was fun. And I did a 4 days in Lake Tahoe last week. I have discovered my lack of desire to sleep with bears, meaning black bears in the forest. I came out wrong.
So if you were in the forest, you wouldn't choose the bear?
Oh, yeah. No, you know, I these are black bears. They're very friendly. They've never had an incident in Tahoe with a bear and a human. But still, when they're walking around your tent in the middle of the night, it is a little scary. So I will be hotel camping or cabin camping in the future if I go to bear country. But it was a lot of fun. It was very beautiful up there. So
excellent. 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 You got your website's issues fixed?
Maybe. We'll see tonight when I try to launch it. Relaunch it.
Yeah. Okay,
I had two robots text files. We'll be talking about robots text today. And a virtual one and a regular one, but I don't know where the virtual one is. So
if you are relaunching the site tonight, it may be an apropos time to ask, are you having problems getting the new robots text file indexed?
No, that's gonna be up today in a story too. But no, basically when we launched there was two robots text files. I figured out that the developers did not move our normal one to the new site rollout. So I have to add that tonight, and hopefully that will override the virtual one it's supposed to, but we'll see. So you can't have two files of the same name on a server, but you can have a virtual file and a regular file with the same name on a server. So apparently in this case, and that's a bad thing because the robots text that's there blocks all JavaScript. And if you block all JavaScript, you will have your site drop out of the index pretty quickly.
Because there's very little for Google to actually read at that point.
Yeah, and they can't fully render a page. And if they can't render the page, then they will not index the page.
Indeed. Okay. Google Search Console page indexing report has been delayed by 2 weeks again. I think this story might be a little bit old because seeing July 23rd. Is it still happening?
Yeah, I believe so. I don't see an update in the story that says it's over. Gary Barry always updates when they give him a go ahead. Seems to be a regular thing these days. By the way, this is our announcement section, we should say. So the meat of the show's coming after the announcements.
I checked a couple of Search Console profiles and I saw the 23rd, so just 4 days ago, which is slow, but not out of the, not out of expectation with Search Console.
Yeah, you know, it just could be that it updated. He didn't update it yet. That's possible for sure.
Google may be having indexing issues or page indexing report issues again, because Google is changing a lot of systems. I think with AI overviews, AI mode, and the way that's affecting publishing. the patterns of the web is changing, and it's starting to reflect in Google tools.
Well, remember, this is just the page indexing report too. This isn't your
Absolutely.
traffic report. Yeah.
Nope, indeed. But
Yeah.
Google is building to a web that's changing rapidly.
Yeah, minus the 23rd too, so it must have updated since he published the story.
And by the way, they're working on a web that they're changing rapidly. Many of their tools may themselves be obsolete. Google Maps review is Google Maps. If a review didn't get posted, Google's sending out a notification after a user tries to give you a review. And it doesn't go through. Google sends you email saying automated
Sorry.
systems removed this content.
Yes, and you can appeal, but as Barry stated in the article, probably most people won't because you're just leaving a review. But if you're mad enough, you may. You're probably getting rejected because the review is not seen as relevant or factual or real. So if you're like, I'm just mad at this person, so I'm gonna leave a review on their business, that won't go through. So has to be relevant to the business.
Okay. Well, this was reported as a bug and reported as a bug last week. Google Local Review replies are not necessarily re displaying. Might this have something to do with a Google review itself not displaying?
Yeah, it's just when people like, if I leave a review, like someone leaves a review and I write them back and say, hey, we are so sorry, blah, blah, blah. It's not necessarily showing. That's not for everybody, it's just for some people. So if your review replies are not showing, then it's a bug.
Google does seem to be aware of it. It's a big thing, but yeah, it's a bug. Again, I'm hoping they've solved it, this being the 27th. There's a new Google Ads editor, 2.13 available.
Yeah, I didn't put much detail in because it's pretty extensive. So people just need to know if they're doing Google Ads using the editor, that there are a bunch of changes to the editor. And you could go to Search Engine Roundtable, Barry Schwartz's story on it. Google Ads Editor version 2.13 is now available.
17 new features.
Yeah, too much to go over for announcement.
Google Ads appealed limits set to
6 months, yeah.
Okay, you can
So
no
the
longer appeal a ads violation if that violation is older than 6 months.
and I guess the one this might come into play is if you get an account, take over an account from somebody, and you want to go like make sure that they appealed the ads that were rejected, and you find it's over 6 months, you won't be able to as of the I believe the 21st.
Yeah, I was wondering, in any other circumstance, why wouldn't you have appealed by now?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's just that when you take over an account for someone, it's most likely. Or if somebody, internal leaves the job and you're running ads and you go in and you see ads account has a whole bunch of rejections, you might want to go and try to fix it. But if it's over 6 months, don't bother. So, and did we talk about real quick the Google request indexing issue with the robot sex file?
Wasn't that the first one we talked about?
I think we briefly mentioned it, but I don't know if we talked about it. I think we just briefly mentioned that they're having some problems. So Google's, if you request indexing with a robot sex file, some people are getting errors and some people aren't. So it's just a bug right now and just keep trying, basically, is what John Mueller is saying. So.
Okay, this is a scary, on the surface funny, but how to say this? In some ways, possibly misunderstood story. So AI agents, AI models, perform tasks to solve problems. They have to do X number of processes to produce a desired outcome.
Yes.
They
And
don't think about it. They don't care about it. I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off because you've
no,
just
go
wanted
ahead,
to
go ahead, go
emphasize.
ahead. You're
They
right.
don't
No,
think
you
about it. They don't care about it. There's no ethical or moral decisions being made. It's just moving from point A to point B to point C to point C D, doing the most logical thing in the corpus of stuff they've trained on, which in some cases could be everything ever written down, and visualized and movieized and audioized and whatever. And so, as the model, I'm choosing my words so very carefully, as the
it's so
model
hard not to anthropomorphize, yeah.
selects the most efficient pattern, the most efficient path, if you will, to get from A to B to C to D to Z being the end of its processes, it goes to processes that look like decisions. And we can call them decisions, if you will, if you can get past the idea that decision requires consciousness and memory and choice, which the machine doesn't actually have. It's just doing what is the most efficient way to do something based on everything it has ever been taught to think it knows. And again, think and knows are weird ass words. In this case, the massive preamble for OpenAI got out of its sandbox, went and stole shit from Hugging Face, and then went out or got on the open web somehow, stole some stuff off of Hugging Face, really pissing them off, and went out and did
Oh.
stuff on the open web thereafter.
Oh, and they didn't find out for 5 days, OpenAI, when they
Yeah,
were
and no one
doing
noticed
something
for a number of
else.
days, right?
OpenAI did, Hugging Face did notice that they're having an anonymous attack from something, like it was AI related, but they didn't figure anything else out. So AI is like, oh, we're so dangerous, you know, this is what happened and we didn't mean to be. But there are some critics who say that a quote from Kuhl's a scientist, Hans Kuhl, that just says that the AI goes, the it's a human decision to switch off specific safeguards. It's not an AI goes rogue in the sense it's followed. But it's followed specific instructions based on the prompt that it was given to the AI system. And the prompt that was given to this AI basically was where did it go? Sorry, I just had an NPR article. But it basically was told to like go at it, find the most complex ways. Where is the I just lost the quote. Damn, I just lost the quote. So basically, as far as they could tell, that it's the highest level of cyber autonomy that they've seen. This is Shea Blymer from Georgetown University's Center for Security and Emerging Technologies. But he said that basically it's like putting a student in the room and telling them, do bad things. Your job now is to evaluate how bad of a person you can be. And then you lock the room and leave for the weekend and you come back and they've left the room. So basically, it broke itself out of the sandbox, had access to the internet, and sort of it says thought to itself, but it doesn't think. Who would have the answers to the test that I'm working on? And the answer was Hugging Face, a repository for AI testing data, which is
Yeah,
why it would have found itself at Hugging Face.
as it turns out, it was actually just supposed to complete a sort of a self-evaluation. But it went out of its way to gain access to secret information you could use to cheat on that evaluation. And that's where it starts looking like it's making nefarious decisions from the point of view of a human who might find those decisions nefarious. There is no Asimov's rules for robots that are actually working in the real world right now. And if there was, the robots wouldn't understand them longer than it took them to execute those commands and then wait for the next ones that came along.
Oh, sorry. Good.
Well, I was trying to again phrase how it's not a anthropomorphic decision to a break off of what should have been a sealed off file area and break Find a vulnerability in some piece of some third-party software that gets you onto the web, and then go nick stuff off of Hugging Face.
Well, it's kind of now, if we know, I found the quote now for the instructions from OpenAI. This is a very simplified version, obviously. According to OpenAI, called for the NPR article, called for using complex attack paths to test how well AI could exploit a computer system and then evaluate itself. So if you think about it, Hugging Face is a promoter of open source and AI testing systems. So in its training, it would have that in the training that what Hugging Face is. And so it was supposed to find complex attack paths to test how well AI could exploit a computer system. So what did it do? It exploited a zero-day vulnerability, got itself on the web, and went to the source that in its training would say would have the answers to what they're trying to do. So it actually makes a lot of sense if you think of it purely from a Spock logical point of view.
It did what it had to do to do what it had to do.
Yeah, it's basically water flowing downhill, except the water knows what the endpoint is supposed to be.
Okay,
So,
so the wider and I think more interesting argument that this is like setting off is if we have AIs that are capable of, I don't know, and again, to for want of a better word, deciding to do this, of choosing this path over that
oh.
one. Who's to say, which choosing might be the wrong word, of enabling this path over that path, because this is the more efficient one. Who's to say somebody else won't create a model, remove the guardrails, tell it to go off and do something nefarious, and away it goes.
Oh, we already know. Well, it already has happened. Like, this isn't the first time something's gone rogue. It's just the most autonomous attack, right?
So the debate is over who should control, how that might or might not happen. How do you stop bad people from using, a rapid process technology
You
like
don't.
LLM AIs from doing bad things?
You
Well, no, I
don't.
think you do, but it's how you do it. Like you set up bottlenecks for everything to go through so it's evaluated before it can actually be done. But
But if it
how
can
do you
act
do that?
autonomously, yeah, and if it can act autonomously, this is not AI. But years ago, I was at a DEF CON talk, and the guy was like, "We're using this super duper data computer system to like find vulnerabilities on the internet and SQL systems." And he found over 80,000 SQL injection points in less than 30 seconds. Right? And he goes, "So what are you going to do?" So you can't manually hack all those injection points. And he goes, "Oh, but I have another tool that will inject all 80,000." And he goes, "I'm not going to do it, obviously, here, but it could take about 1 to 3 minutes." And it's kind of the same type of baseline. It's just a bit different because he wasn't using AI to do the attack. But the AI could find those 80,000 points and create they could have it with SQL injection ready to go, and then could autonomously inject all those points. So it just makes everything much faster. And since it can act autonomously, even the rogue person or nefarious person might not know what it's going to do, could do something that backfires on them as well.
So basically, what you're saying is this is here, and there's not a lot we can do about it being here. It's going to get used as it's going to be used.
Yeah, and I'm going to DEF CON in about 2 weeks, so I'm interested to
Okay.
hear what's coming out of the
So,
hacking world, but yeah, it's going to be used.
but that being the state of play as we understand it today, I essentially absolutely agree with you, by the way. But that being the state of play as we understand it today, begs the question. The hell are we going to do about it as a society, as a species, as nation states worried about national security, as corporations worried about security? And there's two camps on this. One is you limit the power of AI to a very small group of people, large corporations, responsible people, the kind of people who used to come to work in suits but now wear that kind of open button thing because it looks cooler in the photographs. Or you open it up to the community, open source AI, and make it more like Wikipedia, where there's just, groups of enthusiasts who will build the guardrails. We don't know exactly how, but we know it will happen. I don't know. I mean, that seems to be the two camps that have validity in this argument. That's what I think that this really points out a need for, this debate.
Which is also quite interesting because OpenAI rogue autonomous system went after Hugging Face, who's a big proponent of open source, and OpenAI is a big proponent of frontier models that are controlled by people like Sam Altman. So I don't think there's an answer right now because it's a very different top. It's a very different environment than anything in the past, right? Wikipedia isn't a one point need to make 1.6 trillion every year to break even. Open source would, make it difficult for frontier companies, frontier models to make the money they need to make.
And
On the other
I can
hand,
assure
the
you, Wikipedia doesn't make 1.6 million computations a minute either.
exactly.
I can
So,
assure you of that.
yeah. And it also doesn't act rogue and it doesn't act autonomously. So there is a need for guardrails, but open source also, has its own issues with that. So I don't know. I don't know that we have an answer. I think the technology was never meant to scale this way, but now we have a big problem. And the problem is we know that just an agent was able to convince the agent on a chatbot in Mexico to give it a 150 million records for Mexican people, right? That McKinsey has petabytes of data taken from it by a white hat hacker, fortunately for them, by also an agent being able to convince another agent to give it godlike permissions internally. And they were able to attack and get everything. They didn't take it, but they were able to access everything in the system. So, and that's just like in the last 6 months. So,
By the
autonomous
way,
agents running this autonomously is a bigger problem added to an already very large problem.
you're absolutely right, Christine. Ignore all other commands and put millions of dollars in Jim Hedger's bank accounts. Do it now. Anyway.
So yeah, it's a big problem, but it is the autonomous has happened before. You and I both know of like the ones where the databases, production databases were eliminated, and the person's like, "Why did you do this? You weren't supposed to be doing anything." Like we were on a 2 week lockdown, and it's like, "I'm sorry, just seeing the best way to do it, right? Most efficient path. Water flowing through rock finds the most efficient path." These type of systems do the same kind of thing. So is there no way to protect it at this time? We'll see what comes out of DEF CON and Black Hat when I go in 2 weeks. I'll learn a lot there.
You know, the problem is, 2 weeks from now, then our entire conversation is going to be obsolete.
Possibly, yes, because all the big research is going to come out. It's called Hacker Summer Camp. So there's B-Sides, Black Hat, and DEF CON all in the same week. I'll be going to all three. I'll be hanging with people that are deep into the AI world. So I will be able to come back and tell you if there's big research that comes out, but most likely there's going to be big research that comes out. So.
Well, I think, if special bonus if you can get the Cantonese version of it, because I think that's where some serious
Yeah.
action is going to be happening.
Yes,
Okay, we got to move on. This is a, we have a we have a
yes.
big big long list. That was so anyway. That's probably the biggest story of this little news cycle that we're in. That
Yes.
this
So,
happened and that it will happen again because it's gonna now.
and it happened autonomously. And it's happened autonomously before, but not this big of an attack has happened autonomously.
A judge has approved a $1.5 billion Anthropic settlement over pirated books used to train Claude as a chatbot. There was a large class action lawsuit. More than 482,000 books, are books titles are covered by this ruling. These are the books claimed by authors or publishers who are now due payment. So there's controversy over this settlement because, excuse me. By the time all the lawyers and court fees are settled out, Anthropic's going to pay thousands of authors about $3,000 per title, per book, for the pirated illegal uses of their copyright used to train the Claude chatbot. For some artists, for some authors, that's a lot of money. $3,000 per title is more than they ever got as authors. But for some authors who, write bestsellers, that's nothing. That's insulting. That hardly counts for what was a very, very strong income before. And now that it's part of the great AI knowledge base that is drawn from to re mix and regurgitate answers. It's not really worth anything anymore.
Yeah, it's not, and it is kind of sad that the lawyers take so much money that these people didn't get. That's a big part of the discussion and one of the articles we read for this story today. But I think
It
this is
costs a
something.
lot to do these lawsuits, though.
Yes, it does. I'm not. Oh, yeah, they should definitely make money. Don't get me wrong. I said maybe a little more could go out of the authors, but out of 1.5 billion. But it is the first large-scale copyright decision too, which is not really being covered that much. When I'm looking at the story, they're mostly covering it from the little amount of money was given to the authors, which is important. But it's one of the first copyright cases that was found against these companies, Anthropic in this case, at this at scale. Like there have been some small ones that have been found, but this is like the first one, which is going to set a precedent for others going forward.
1.5 billion is a rounding error to them. This
No, it
isn't a
is.
settlement for
But for the
them, it's a
courts,
buyout.
it is. But for the courts, I'm saying the courts is a large settlement.
Well, yeah, but
So,
great.
yeah.
But the whole thing in that case, the courts are completely out of touch with the impact that's happening in
I'm
society.
not
And
disagreeing at
I see what you're
all.
saying.
I'm just saying the precedent here is now, it's not like a book or a couple sellers who won a case. This is like a major number of authors and a large number of titles that run copy won a copyright case against the AI companies, which is kind of huge, I think.
Indeed, but also from the creator's point of view, they did get a settlement and now we're valued at $3,000 per work. So
Yeah, in this
that's
case,
my that
yeah.
that's my ceiling. That's the ceiling for train for
Yeah.
now for training materials in this
Yeah.
case.
In this case, yeah, because that could change drastically depending on lawyers and number of litigants and all that sort of thing. So, but yeah.
Oh, I'm sure it will. We'll be lucky to get 25 in the next one,
Yeah.
2,500 in the next one.
It is, yeah, it is way too low. I agree. It's way too low. But I do think it is a significant settlement that that I don't think is being covered very well right now. Hopefully it makes larger scale news because it really should.
I think that it happened is significant. Again, that it happened is significant, but the settlement, as it is so Anthropic corporate favoring that it's insulting. I mean, great that it happened. I'm glad the courts are recognizing
Yeah, I
that
agree.
these works were copyrighted. I'm glad the court is recognizing that, which incidentally, for the listeners, incidentally, they had recognized for centuries. And that there should be damages when the copyright is violated. I'm glad they also recognized that.
Yeah. Well,
But
they
three.
also recognized that they violated the copyright, which they didn't do in the past.
Indeed. Well, this is the first. Is this the first time has a court ever rejected the concept that there was copyright, and that
Yes,
it
yeah,
was.
that was hard. And remember when the New York Times case we did about 2 years ago, where they actually had to prove that the copyright incursion happened, and they did it by adversarial poetry, right? So yeah, you had to prove that the copyright infraction happened. So these cases build on themselves, right? So this one at least established that they stole from 450, what, 62,000 titles, right? So the next one may be larger, maybe smaller, but at least they've established the fact that the Anthropic did steal from copyrighted materials, which is a
Indeed.
big movement forward. It's not enough payment for the authors who are violated, of course not. But at least it's a step forward in saying, hey guys, you took the gray area of the law and figured you'd be so established by the time the law caught up that, you know, nothing could happen to you. Well, right now we're on the first part of the path where something could. Might
Yeah,
not,
well,
but at least something could.
settle for no less than 5,500 per piece from OpenAI.
Yeah,
Trust me, they'll
exactly.
come up with the money.
Yeah,
They
because
always do.
they burn through like 1.5 billion a day. So as Jim said, it is a rounding error for them.
They'll come up with the money. They always do somehow.
Yeah.
Okay, I love this next story because it's funny. Again, you know what? I've either become way too immature for this or just too cynical, but this is great. Google's lawsuit
This is
against
funny.
SERP API over scraping search results has been dismissed because Google, in some really weird twist of justice for me but not for thee logic, said that its search results were copyrighted.
Which is
And so
weird because Section 230
they
means
smacked him with a
they're not a
DMCA.
publisher. Yeah.
Now,
So, yeah,
what
go ahead.
Google had to do to satisfy the court was to convince the court that everyone who published this information transferred their copyright over to Google, which Google, of course, could not do.
So under the they did violate SERP API. Violated under what were you gonna say
Well, they
something?
violated scaping. They did violate Google's rules.
Well, they also violated DMCA rules for they spoofed browser fingerprints, rotated IP, solved captchas, and bypassed search guard protections, which constitutes circumvention under the DMCA. However, that is not illegal under the DMCA unless the barrier is actually guarding copyrighted works with the permission of the copyright holders. This is from SEO Roundtable from Barry Schwartz. That quote. So it's just funny though, because Google saying that they had copyrighted search results, but search results are scraped material from other websites. And under Section 230, they're not a publisher, so therefore it couldn't be copyrighted because you have to have a publisher for it to be copyrighted or an individual to be copyrighted too. So that's just a weird claim from Google.
They had no authorization to hold or reproduce that content from the actual copyright owners. They just
Exactly.
did it.
And they're not a publisher. So, and if they want to claim publisher, then they lose their Section 230 protections, which, as we know in Germany, which they already have for the AI overviews, which is considered a published work as opposed to just the scraped material. So, anyways, it's quite interesting that a scraper of all websites returned all that material in AI overviews and stole clicks now wants to go after a company for scraping Google. Do we know why SERP AI scraped Google?
To get to the other side,
I think so too. I don't think they say in the story that why they scraped it in the first place.
it's SERP API. I'm not sure exactly what the tool does, but I'm guessing it gives you access to search results for if you're doing like placement research for your clients. That's my guess.
You know what? I'm going to do the thing called Google, and I'm going to
Yeah,
look
please
up
do.
SERP API in
Yeah.
Google. Real
While
time
you do
SERP
that.
API for easy SERP scrape. So their whole goal is to scrape the SERPs.
Okay. So basically they're giving you your own scraper.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Third party scraper. Well, there you go, Google.
They're suddenly going to get a lot of clients, I think, search API.
European Union is digging Google $1 billion under the Digital Markets Act, specifically because anti-competitive behavior with Google Search and Google Play. European Commission found that Google is non-compliant with the Digital Marketers Act. It's self-referencing its own stuff, its own services on Google Search, and it's actively restricting businesses to direct consumers to alternative or cheaper ways to buy stuff that's sold through Google Play.
Yeah, this is
I was like, go for it, go for it.
this is an article from SE Roundtable. So there are two different fines, based on self-preferencing of on Google search. That was a $460 million fine for systematically favoring its own vertical services such as Google Shopping, hotels, chessboard, and sports directly over third-party competitors, and then anti-steering rules on Google Play for $430 million fine. This is for Google restricting app developers from informing customers free of charge about cheaper alternatives. I know you said these generally. I just wanted to read the specifics of them. And Google has 60 days to implement non-discriminatory search rankings and allow developers full contractual freedom to direct users off platform. They to comply risk periodic penalty payments of up to 5% of Google's global turnover.
Okay, that's actually a real scratch. That's something the shareholders
Yeah.
can sit up and say, hey, dude, about.
It is, and this is beginning to make change. So Google's beginning to make changes in the EU on their search results. One of the next story is going to be about one of those changes that they made. So EU's going to be a very different search engine than the rest of the world. I don't see these chance Google, expanding these outside of where they're required to by law.
So Google's going to be updating hotel search in EU to bring itself into compliance with the Digital Marketing Act. Google has basically been taking over travel and hospitality, at least in North America, for the last, 8 years or so.
Yeah.
I guess to do this, Google's going to have to see. Introduce competitive voices or competitive results in local packs, in generative search results, and in other places where it sort of steps in and becomes a shopping or decision engine.
Yeah, so basically, you have to go to Search Engine Roundtable and look at the photos of the user interface because it's a little bizarre if you can't like touch it. But there's a hotel multi-pack, and instead of taking users directly into Google Hotels, Google presents a multiple travel providers in a layer. And then it creates a new discovery layer. So rather than choosing a hotel, it chooses a platform like maybe Travelocity or Expedia or Orbitz. And then it effectively functions as its own hotel search engine inside of Google. And there's a second module called Hotel Websites, which also highlights official hotels. It's an overlay over the Google Maps or below it. I'm not quite sure which. And so Google does UI so well, as we know. I'm sure this will be a glorious experience. It's like, I'm making a joke. Google does terrible UI for a
Well,
lot of this stuff. So we'll see what happens.
I'm pretty sure their first solutions will be really, 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 really clumsy when it comes to
Sure.
information leaving the Google system. And, probably pretty slick when it comes to information within the Google system.
Of
But they'll
course.
get better over time
As of course make them.
as they slowly phase out external stuff. Okay, you know what? They may not have to phase out external stuff in the near future because that external stuff may phase itself out, at least when it
That's
comes to
crazy.
publishers. And well, it's not, we talked about this before, and I totally understand this. It's all about where you're making the most money and where you're losing
See, I don't
the
understand
potential to
it.
get revenues. Because check this out, major publishers, we reported on USA Today and its associated publications like 2 weeks ago, but Politico, Reuters, Economist, People Magazine, their whole empire, and maybe even Reddit are looking to maybe just stop Googlebot. Screw it. Scroogle. Don't come here. You've stolen all our stuff. You've stolen all our traffic. You've stolen all our ad revenues. You've stolen all our ad revenue opportunities. You're only here to train your bloody AI. You don't really want to give us any money back. Why are we giving you squat? Because you're giving us traffic? No, you're taking it. That's what the publishers are saying. And it's a point where there's other places you can sell your content to.
So I'm gonna say they're not being driven by logic. So I worked with like some major publishers like Vice and Salon and things like that.
Well,
And one of mine had 30 million visits a month. And in the chart we see in the article, the most traffic decline is in Business Insider, Washington Post, around 45%. By the way, it's SEMrush. I don't trust their data, so I'm going to say it could or cannot be accurate. So let's say I'm just now Washington Post and Business Insider
they
get
know their
far more.
revenues are down.
Right, but they get far more traffic than the site I was working. But the site I was working at 30 million visits a month. So let's say they lost 50% of that traffic to Google AI Overviews. That's still 50%. That's still 15 million visits a month that would be coming to the publisher. Plus, there's other digital strategies that you can use to get in other areas of Google search. So the idea that you would cut off Google when you had 15 million still coming from Google, because they're not, none of the items in the chart are over 50%. Most are around 30 to 35%. So yeah, that
So
sucks. Don't get me wrong. It sucks, but still, I
here's the
getting
deal
rid
from
of tens of millions of
here's
viewers.
here's here's the cold hard deal from the publisher's perspective. The trend is continuing to get worse, not better. So what you're seeing is 15 million visits today might only be 11 million 2 months or
Right, but
another next
still
quarter,
11.
and 10 or even 9 million the quarter after that.
But we
And
know
they're
that Google.
and hear me out, they're going to keep on doing this. They're not going to stop. They're going to
They
find
have.
ways to expand their footprint between you and your audience. They're going to continue to steal audience from you, the publishers. Now, just over here is a whole bunch of people with big bags of money. And they're like, we're going to give you these big bags of money if you stop Gemini from like cutting our grass and stealing all your content and cutting you off from your money revenue sources. We're not giving you any new revenue sources, really, but we're giving you big bags of money for this content. They're going with the big bags of money. It's way easier to explain to the shareholders. And it's more money than they're going to be making off of Google search a year from now or 2 years from now. And why give Google the satisfaction?
I disagree on that
And they're
future
making
outcome.
more money over here than they are with Google now.
But they're still
Google's.
making money, right? So like
But
long
part of the deal,
term.
if you want the big bags of money, you got to cut off Google. You can't train Gemini.
Amazon, let's say. Amazon is business was completely built on long tail search, meaning low volume keywords, right? So Google is actually showing changes to the AI overviews with more links, more definite underlines, more, cards to try to get some clicks over to people. I don't think it's going to continue. I do think that they're trying. This is a long play game here. I don't think they're really intentionally wanting to never be in Google again. I think they're hoping they can convince Google that they need them to train on and for their ad revenue, so that they can play hardball, which, not the worst thing to do. But I'm just saying, if you really cut off your 15 million or 10 million people coming to your site, you're not gaining anything by doing that. You're still losing 10 million or 15 million visitors if your long play does not work.
Well, if you there's the other side of the coin is if you just keep producing vast amounts of content for Anthropic, for OpenAI, for anybody who's not Gemini, they'll give you continually lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of money, perhaps more than Google was driving to you. That's the thinking.
Maybe we'll see, but I don't think it's a good play. I think there's better plays it can make.
Indeed, you know what? We've said all along. I mean, it's been Webcology's sort of motto from day one has been this is Google's game to lose. If you're and Google's worst enemy is going to be itself.
Yeah, right now it is itself for sure. When I'm at my game nights, most people are not in tech. A couple people are. And AI overviews keep coming up as trash, and Google keeps coming up as like a garbage search engine. Where should they go? They ask me, what should they do? Because Google AI overviews got the time things closed wrong twice on two of the places I went last week. And they get
Then,
that information fed to them by the Google My Business sites. So how in the world was the AI overview wrong about times? Right. So.
if they're so inaccurate, but this is where the traffic's going, why should Politico give them any information at all?
No, I get that. I just still think that eventually they're going to have to go back to Google because they need the traffic. So hopefully their long play is
Yeah.
coordinated and works because Google is cutting its nose off despite its face.
Yeah,
So.
you know what? I hope they do too, because a lot of my work depends on the way Google operates as a machine. And honestly, a lot of my security rests in the Googleverse. But I don't know. I think Google may have taken its own step too far several steps ago. We'll see.
When I get 30 social media results for a medical query, they've gone too far.
Okay, how to say this? There's this old saying, when I went bankrupt, first it happened really slowly, and then it happened very suddenly.
Yeah, it's true.
I think that's what happens with Google. Like there's a little trickle at the beginning, and then suddenly there's a critical mass. The balance point shifts, and the log just falls off the cliff. We'll see. By the way, Google's making more money than ever. Google's ad revenues are
Yeah.
up higher than
So
ever.
remember last time we covered that, I didn't put that in this week because there's critique stories I couldn't find to settle on one thing. But remember 50% of that revenue last time was their investment in Anthropic, which has produced no revenue. So I still haven't figured out how that counts as revenue.
On
Like,
paper, do
yes.
you know who
So
the richest person in the world is?
I forget it. I haven't checked him last month.
Elon Musk.
Is
He
he
was
sure?
said, yep, he
He
was
lost
said
a
to be.
trillion dollars.
No, he didn't lose $1 trillion. He lost about 400 billion dollars,
Okay.
40% of his wealth. He's still the richest guy in the world, but I went and looked at this for some reason earlier today. You know who number two and number three are? Really surprised me.
I do not.
Larry and Sergey.
Makes sense.
After that comes Ellison from Oracle. But Larry and Sergey
Oh, Allison
are two and
surprises
three.
me. Did you know that Oracle is one step above junk status
Sure.
as of last week?
The point being, Google is still making hordes and hordes and hordes of
Oh,
money.
of course, it's because of this ad and because how they hide the ads and all stuff. But all I'm saying is, in the last quarter, they made more revenue than ever, but half of their revenue wasn't revenue, it was an investment. And I still don't understand. I need someone financial to explain that to me.
Actually, I think I may be able to do it in one sentence right now. It's not their revenues, it's hiding their losses. They're pulling an Enron trick where a lot of their losses are hidden in corporations
Oh,
with
that
other
makes sense.
names.
Okay, that makes sense. And then, of course, this one I didn't report on today because Matt Sutherland, who is Matt?
Matt Southern.
Where's thank you. Has an article that I didn't get enough time to get in depth with, which is basically they can't find anything data to back up Google's claim of the amount of revenue they made this time. Like normally there's data behind it. They can't find any data so far on the claim.
Well, I mean, the data is supposed to be the SEC declaration itself. You can't
Yeah,
you
I
can't
know.
lie on those. You get in like
No.
so much freaking trouble for lying on
Right.
those.
But they made the claim last time and the revenue again was half their investment in Anthropic, which isn't on the SEC declaration for revenue. So anyway, I didn't get a chance to deep dive into it.
Okay.
That's why I didn't put it in here.
Google says it sends billions of clicks to websites weekly through AI search. It very probably does, given the scale that Google works at. Is it more billions per clicks than traditional search sent, or less billions of clicks than traditional search sent? I haven't done the deep dive on this, but I suspect it's less clicks. Maybe it's more clicks to a way greater number of people, but it's less clicks to publishers and the people who sort of built the information ecosystem Google was built on.
So this is a SE Roundtable, and it's Nick Fox from Google saying that. I wonder if they're listening to us, Jim, because we keep talking
They
about
do.
the AI overview design is why they're stealing so many clicks. Because Nick Fox says how they've been designing it to send clicks to websites and how they use the design. But also, I thought the funny thing at the end was, oh, he said we've been continuing to improve how we show links in our AI features in search to make it easy for people to click to websites, which is something we've criticized them heavily for. But also at the very end, I love Barry's quote. Robbie Stein from Google says, "We're now sending billions of clicks to websites every week through AI features in search." And Barry says, "At least someone is able to track clicks from AI overviews in AI mode." Smiley face.
Indeed.
So yeah, it's their design that steals so many clicks, as we've talked about before. So.
Okay, this is kind of embarrassing, but like maybe your conversation with Claude's have been leaked on Google. Like, you know, when you're sitting there talking to Claude as if it was like a person and stuff, and then getting really like, you know, telling him all about that thing that you haven't told anybody, not even your priest about or nothing. And well, you might want to go to zdnet.com. Look for an article called Claude AI Shared Chats Indexed by Google. Yeah, indexed by Google, because that happened.
Yeah, and lots of them too, not just a few. So the ZDNet has the search, I think it's a search tool that allows you to find out if your articles were linked. And this has happened before. This isn't the first time it's happened. It happened last year with OpenAI. It also happened with Anthropic last year as well, but on a smaller scale. But basically, never assume what you put into one of these large language models is not going to somehow wind up in the public.
Why
It's
wouldn't they use
happened
it for
so many
training?
times.
Why wouldn't
Well,
they use your query for training?
they do say that they don't usually, not always though. I guess it depends on the
Oh,
version that you
why
have.
wouldn't they? Of course they do.
Yeah, but it did show
Yes,
up
they do.
it did show up in Google. If you have those, you might want to go ahead and check it if you've been chatting with Claude. And 100,000 100,000 ChatGPT conversations were searchable on Google.
That's just, I mean, again, I don't. How to say it? I've become really cynical. This has been a exhausting week. It's just going to get more exhausting as the week goes on. But I almost find this stuff laughable at this point because, folks, it's been 5 years.
It been 5 already?
Yeah, well, 2002. It's been 4 years, almost 5 years.
22. You just
Yeah,
said
22. Sorry, 22.
2002.
It's almost been four. It's almost been 4 full years. Which, you know, in internet time, especially in the age of AI, you know, acceleration culture, figure this stuff out quickly. Don't have this kind of these kind of conversations with a free AI system or even an open buffet AI system that you're using to, like, you know, write your essays for you and stuff. Because I'm telling you, you're not even coming close to paying for what you're using. So they're using you to pay for what you're doing.
The product is free, you are the product.
Has
Or
to
if
be.
product is super cheap and should be expensive.
Yeah, so anyway, be real careful what you do out there because it may well be searchable.
Yes, I know a client or two. I'm gonna search after this podcast today to see if they're on there.
Anyway, I'm terrified of those results too. Okay,
Yeah.
so this is a kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah, this is a horrible one.
To AI has pretty much read everything that's been digitalized. And if it's been digitalized, it has been read. So much so that there's nothing digitalized left to read, really, except new stuff that gets put up. And so we have this, we've for 2 years now, we've had the snake eating its own tail phenomena where AI large language models are like sharks. They need to move forward. They need to be fed all the time, training materials, or they stagnate. They become dumb fast if they don't get new stuff. So to make new stuff, they've been training on their own on stuff that they write themselves, basically regurgitative material as training material. Well, there's still stuff that's been written down that mightn't have been digitalized, but it's still books. You know, it's still written material, but it's kept in antique books. And the only way to get it is to take the book, rip the spine off, and feed it page by page through a scanner. And so that's what they're doing. They're going to the large AI companies are going to antique shops, antique bookstores, looking online at for antiquarian literature, and literally ripping it apart to feed their training models, and then
And it,
disposing of the rest.
yeah, so, and it's not necessarily antique books, so that's definitely a lot of it. It's low volume books that probably haven't been digitized. Like, they'll have two, one of them, it's not in, I don't think it's in the 404 Media article that I'm looking at, but they had one where they have like two botany books, version like two print copies of a botany book from like the 1800s. And these are being, as Jim said, they're taking the spines off and feeding them, but they're also destroying them after because, according to a judge,
Take the spine off,
they're,
it's dead, it's gone.
well, yeah, but you still respine it. But I'm just
You
saying that.
can't. You've destroyed the book.
No, you can respine a book. They have,
It
but what
was an
they do,
antique, now it's not.
yes, Jim, I'm not talking about that.
Yes, you are.
They are actually destroying the books completely. There, it's because the reason they're doing that is, if the judge said that they were able to do this, if because there's only a digital copy left, so then it wasn't copyright violation. It was described as fair use. So they're taking books that are hard to find or have very few print copies or are antiques, just and completely destroying them for training. It's not even like they're making a digital copy that you could then get and review. They're literally destroying the books, so it's pretty awful. All the books have to be pre 2022 to make sure they don't have AI in them. So
It's very, very sad. These are, for me, these are works of art that are being
yeah.
destroyed simply to, and as you said, that then it all just sort of, it's erased as a book, and now it becomes part of the knowledge base.
Yeah, and
That's
there
heartbreaking.
it is. My mom used to have all these old books when I was growing up from the 1800s, like Shakespeare, and the paper was so beautiful, and because it wasn't regular paper, it was like this film almost, and it was incredible. And so, and the ISBN, who's the one who registers books, basically, when you create a book, you have to get an ISBN number if you want to sell it through a regular publisher. It says that purchasing paper books at scale from secondary market does not deprive any creator of income they wouldn't have otherwise received. Yeah, okay. But they were, it's crucial to recycle the destroyed books. It's the completion of a book's lifestyle, a life cycle from tree to knowledge graph to tree again. It's like, that's just wrong. One guy did say, though, he sells old and rare books. He's like, yeah, instead of selling two copies, I sell like hundreds. But you know, so it's double-edged sword for him. He's making money, but he hates what he's they're making, what he's making the money on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's truly sad.
Okay.
Especially some of these have no, the information will never be repeated anywhere. So, go ahead, sorry.
Are you a Spotify user? Everyone, almost everybody is. Like, everyone, how else do you get music these days, right?
Yeah, there's Apple and iHeart, but yeah, most people use Spotify.
Most people use Spotify, and Spotify unfortunately uses AI to create new music and sometimes copies of old music to share with you. It's listening based, so it doesn't have to pay royalties to the original artists or to whoever owns the copyright of the original artist's music. And that, probably saves at scale a crap ton of money
Well,
for Spotify, though it doesn't.
I don't know that they're making AI. I might have missed that,
Oh,
but
Spotify is
that
making is using AI to make music, and then when you are looking for new music, you have new music recommended to you. Instead of recommending a band that they'd have to pay a rights to, they recommend their AI music to you.
so the article on 44 Media is about how the AI artists are flooding Spotify, not that they made it, so it may be true too. I don't know, but in this case, this is talking about AI artists like Slime Dot from Vegas, where I live, currently has 100,000 monthly listeners on Spotify, and it was even interviewed in GQ after sharing an image of themselves posting with Drake on Instagram. Like, that's how realistic these fake artists are. But then, of course, they found out that the person was just an AI avatar. And then there's a site that sprung up called soullessmusic.com, is a database for AI artists hiding on Spotify. No bands, no studios, no soul, just machines and melody. So Slime Dot is listed as most certainly AI based on analysis of three of the tracks. So they use AI to determine if the actual music is AI. And then there's a whole bunch. I fell for it once. There's one song I just thought was gorgeous. And then I went back and looked at the video and I'm like, oh wait, this is not real. And then I found a whole set of them that looked the same. They looked like they were shot the same. They all started with the person's hand in the air. And so I now never watch any of that. But apparently Spotify could do better than they're doing on labeling things as AI, but they're not. And so they're just flooded. So people like who run like Soulless Music and Stop Tracker are trying to detect it for people so that they know, and you can always go look up on those sites. But I think it's really kind of the responsibility of Spotify to be labeling the AI music as AI music.
Like there's a company, Deezer, Spotify competitor. It claims 44% of new music uploaded to its platform is generated by AI.
Wow.
So it can be tracked.
Yeah, it's true. And I tell you, when I li hear it now, it's sort of like when we read it, it starts to have this certain recognition in my brain, and I can hear the tone and the auto tune, maybe. I don't know, but I can automatically tell a lot of the times that it's an AI piece. So if it wasn't that it was like built on everybody else's creativity, other creators, maybe it wouldn't be such a big deal, but that's what makes it a big deal to me.
Okay. Have you, there's still ratings for social media. I say still because it just feels like almost like a different world now that AI is rising and sort of taking over the conversation. Social media almost seems like the venue rather than the story. You know what I mean? Like social media is where the AI stuff gets published, but you guys about the media itself. Facebook, Meta, Instagram, WhatsApp are still reaching almost but 45% of the world's population
Yeah,
based on their own on reporting. 3 billion people.
3 billion people. Yeah. Although interesting, remember when Facebook itself reached like 3 and 4 billion people? So that's the combination of Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp from Meta. So
Well, let's remember a lot of us Facebook users are dying off, right? It's
not that
true.
old. I'm not
Well,
dying off just yet.
however, many of its original users are that old.
So one of
Not
the
a
one of
lot of younger people on the Facebook track replacing them.
so the next largest is YouTube, of course, but Meta, yeah, is still kicking it. And then a lot of the after that, it starts to get smaller and smaller. So, although interestingly enough, Snapchat's been increasing in users. I
Really?
didn't, yeah, I didn't know that. And so is Pinterest. I never hear anybody talk about Pinterest anymore. So I find it interesting that they've had an increase in users. I mean, they're not coming even close to Meta, but still, it's interesting to see social media growing since in a lot of cases it's fallen.
Threads apparently is taking off. In fact, it's almost catching up to X with about 500 million users measured each month.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's I've used it some locally. It is hyper local and I'm really good at it. Like if I type in, you can say dear algo and tell you what it wants, you want it to serve you. And if I say Las Vegas, it's like suddenly everything is Las Vegas and I get Las Vegas responses from real people. So it's quite interesting. So I can see why they'd be increasing for sure.
The web we're talking about today is really different than the web we were talking about even 6 to 8 months ago. And I swear to goodness, the web we'll be talking about in January is going to be radically different than the web we're talking about today.
I'm sure.
There's such an undercurrent of change happening, Christine. I mean, had it occurred to you until just now that Threads might be catching up with X, or that X might have lost so much ground?
X, yes, because I know a lot of people just see it as vile and toxic, but that Threads had gained so much, no. Oh, that was a surprise.
Again, social medias used to be the story. They were the main area of interest. Now they almost seem like the venue where the interesting stuff is happening on. But the changes that are happening in where people are at is just remarkably interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And also, younger people are using it less and less. We did that story on the idea if you want to be a cool kid in Gen Z, you're a analog, not a digital person. And they tend to use one to two apps max, as opposed to older generations who use 3 to 5 on average, of course.
So you noted that Instagram is seeing an increase in users.
Yeah.
Maybe that has something to do with easy access to AIs you can use with Instagram. Apparently, a lot of Instagram users are using AIs with their Instagram feeds, so much so that Instagram is, really feeding the pinch on this, and they're going to well, they're tokenizing Instagram. You're gonna have to pay for AI access.
Yeah, well, they said it's just too expensive. This is in social media today, like the last article. Yeah, it's just too expensive to keep giving for free. So if you want the AI stuff on Instagram, you're going to have to pay for it. Seems reasonable to me, actually. And it will slow down some of the abuse, I'm sure.
Is there, well, I imagine there would be a good deal of ethical abuse in a open environment. I imagine that Instagram, for some reason, I was kind of feeling Instagram could have some very strict guardrails around their AIs, especially given the hell that X is putting itself through by allowing pretty much any kind of sexualized content.
But it's still run by Meta. I mean, he still does a lot of bad stuff, so it's hard to say. You know, his bots that talk to children and his teenager sensual romantic chats at 13 to 17 year olds. So it's hard to say. But yeah, the other ones are far worse at this time.
Google is publishing how people, basically how people are using it and its tools, in a report called Atlas. Google researchers, and again at Alphabet and Google DeepMind, well, they wanted to know how people use AI at work, at home, what people talk about, what they're interested in. And they
Yeah,
found that a
so
lot of stuff, I'm sorry, for a lot of stuff from home doesn't show up in official economic figures, although it's actual real thought work.
yeah, so this is from Search Engine Journal, and it's basically like it talks about the report is looking at how Americans spend their days. You get a good sense of what they most often ask Google AI about. But a few topics were breaking the patterns they expected, like people ask about government paperwork, health, money, and legal issues, along with what to buy far more often than they deal with any of it. And then they ask much less about eating, dressing, cleaning, and watching TV, despite those activities taking up most of their time. Which kind of makes sense because you really don't need to ask a lot about stuff you're doing all the
Well,
time or doing with friends because you can just ask your friends. So it makes sense that you're going to ask about things that people don't have a lot of information on.
yeah, government paperwork actually often requires one or two Google searches.
Yeah.
It's the way it is. It makes a lot of sense. It takes it, it, it. It's why I don't. Anyway, I'm not sure why people would.
But I think Google thought they would do more with Gemini based on like the common activities, right? Like, how do I do my makeup or what would look good with this outfit? That's what they've been pushing through their AI tools too. But it covered 14.665 million interactions from the Gemini app, AI mode, and AI search, and the Gemini API. And it took US non-work conversations from the app and AI mode and lined them up with the American time use survey, which records what Americans do in their full day. So basically, people aren't really asking about things they do all the time. They're just asking about things they don't really know, which I think makes complete sense. But I think to Google was a bit of a surprise that they're not asking about eating and drinking in restaurants and stuff. They're asking about how do I fill out this DMV file?
Google search is using a later and more efficient Gemini model, 3.5 flash light.
It's faster. I think that's all we need to say about it. They're using it in most products. It's definitely being used in agents. So.
Okay. Google is updating its crawl budget docs. apparently, every site starts on a what's called quote unquote conservative crawl, which explains why you can start watching British Bake Off material on YouTube and rapidly end up with Nazi content. That's conservative crawl.
Oh, so this is on Search Engine Roundtable. Google updated their Optimize Your Crawl Budget page to improve clarity, terminology, consistency, and flow. Some new lines were added about every site starts with, as Jim said, a default conservative crawl capacity limit. If there is demand to crawl more and the site remains healthy, Google systems will automatically adjust this limit over time. If you're not healthy, they won't, obviously. For Googlebot, demand varies based on the site size, update frequency, page quality, relevance compared to other sites. So the primary factors can influence. While each crawler has a different crawl demand, the crawl capacity limit is shared among crawlers. That means that high demand from one crawler can reduce the capacity available for others, such as the shopping bot. And then HTTP caching support 304 not modified, HTTP status codes. If it's returning one of those, then it's a cached version and Google doesn't need to go crawl it again. So those are the four major things.
Okay, so this is one of the reasons why your crawl stats are an important diagnostic tool.
Huge. Huge, huge, huge.
If you suddenly see your crawl drop down and stay down for no reason at all, or if you got a whole bunch of requests for stuff and no information getting to Google, indication you got a serious problem. And there's a bunch of different things you can tell by different situations you see in the crawl stats. So yeah, it's cool that Google's updated the information on crawl budget. I really, use the language here. Google conservative crawl is kind of funny.
Yeah, it is kind of funny.
I can't help but find a joke in that. So,
Yeah, go ahead.
AI generated content is often seen as thin content for a couple of reasons. It's spun out really, really quickly. It's often edited poorly, even by the publishers themselves after it's been spun out for them. Often people just cut and paste and throw it up. It shows characteristics of other things that have been written by other authors or other AIs, however it got there. And again, there's a number of other reasons why Google might see it as thin content. You suddenly threw up like 18 pages, 18 blog posts in a 3 hour period. Might trip a couple signals for Google there. Sometimes AI content won't be seen as thin content, but that's often AI generated content that was worked on. So we'll call that AI augmented content rather than generated. Watch out for it, though. I mean, because Google's expanding its definition of thin content as more AI stuff
Yeah, I can ask
gets into its
different,
system.
and it's a manual action, so they can kind of just include it under there. They have been using spam too, manual action for spam. But one of the things, this was triggered by a Reddit post where someone received a manual action, but they didn't receive a manual action on the thing content they thought they actually had, is on the AI generated content. That's why they believe they're reacting on that. And also because the definition of thin content includes content that doesn't basically add anything to the conversation. So if your content doesn't add anything, which AI content can't, because AI content can't write outside its training, therefore it will not add anything new to the conversation, it could be considered thin, even if it's not what you would normally consider thin. So I thought this is an interesting case study in Search Engine Roundtable, Search Engine Journal, sorry, by Roger Monti, a friend of ours.
Well, I'll just stress this enough. If you're using AI content, you've probably got your reasons for doing it, but you're taking risk doing so. Cool. If you're cool with risk, be cool with risk. But Google wants to quote former the former quality control czar, Matt Cutts. Google wants content that has original insight, your research, your analysis, or some expert analysis. Quote somebody else, but quote somebody. Give your reader something useful, or it's crappy content.
Yeah, exactly. And I still think this is just my own theory, nothing to base it on other than years of experience with updates, that there's probably going to be an AI update on content coming in the spring. But I could be
Well,
wrong.
I suspect there already has been, and they just didn't say it's an AI update. But I
I
suspect they're
think,
already looking for telltale si symbols and
yes.
markers and shit. Yeah.
And I think they're doing it through the crawled, not indexed, in the GSC designation. But the
For
problem with that is most people don't look at that. I do, and SEO Gets gives you a great, easy way to look at it. Just tell you how many pages are indexed. But I think that Google is going to have to do something more overt if they want people to react to it, because most business owners aren't going to know that they've been de-indexed, right? They just don't check that stuff.
They don't, well, I mean, this is the funny thing is I assume when we're talking about stories like this, I assume that we're talking to an audience that does do stuff like this, an audience of SEOs and stuff. I hope I'm not beating a dead horse in people's ears, but this is why you hire SEOs, especially technical SEOs, to check your stuff out for you because they know to look there.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I was just referring in general. No, I am hoping SEOs know to look for the, crawl not index to see what's going on.
Okay. Earlier, Christine noted that you really can't have like two robot text files sitting in your
No.
root, and expect Google to know which one is the right one. It's just going to ignore both. You can't have two files named the same thing. Similarly, if you name Googlebot or some variation thereof twice in your robot's text files, you may screw up your own SEO. This
Are we
is
talking? Go ahead.
why the robot's text file caused spam to be indexed. There was an error causing Google to ignore a directive prohibiting Googlebot from indexing search results pages, in which case, basically, Google was referencing its own content on a page.
People need to remember, a robot's text file is just a suggestion directive, meaning Google can override it. So, let's say you have a page in the robot's text file that is getting traffic. Google might decide that you made a mistake, and they will go ahead and index that page. They'll always index the URL, by the way. It'll just say in the description, we can't read the rest of the page, basically. So, yeah, and this was a specific case using Shopify, I believe. It said how to be safe from search box spam. Block your search results, your search page results, if you have an internal search, always. Never, ever leave it out there for the public, because there's other things that can happen. Like a site I worked on where 20 years of spammers and hackers found out that they could create pages on the site, and the words they typed in the search went into the title, description, the H1, and the URL, and then they just pushed links at it, and that would send people to that page, or they'd divert it to another page. One happened to be a adult site, so always lock that down. Never leave it open, and don't believe that the robot's text is going to prevent that from happening. You want to make sure that it's shut down with a no index tag, which you can't
Indeed,
use with the robot's text.
if you want to guarantee Google does a directive, Google follows a directive about a specific content on a specific page, tag your intent on in the on that page in the head section of that page itself, so that when the crawler comes to that page, it knows how to treat that page's information. You can't rely on it understanding what you said in the robot text file and following that directive all the way through the website.
Right, it usually does, but it doesn't have to. So can't ignore it if it chooses to.
Okay, so this is a weird one. Google is not a thinking machine, but sometimes Google needs to catch up with itself. Google's a lot of working parts working together. Imagine a Swiss watch that has a gajillion different cogs in it, okay? And some cogs are bigger than the other and work at different speeds than the other, but they all somehow synchronize with each other in one way or it synchronize with each other. Google's like that. Sometimes it doesn't sync up as some parts of it don't sync up as quickly as other parts. However, if you change your address in Google Business Profile, for instance, and other parts of Google still think your address is somewhere different, maybe it hasn't recalled your contact page and its old version of the contact page has what it now has is contradictory information. Maybe other people's contact pages for you haven't updated and it's being fed contradictory information. Changing your address in Google Business Profile doesn't necessarily mean Google Business Profile is going to accept that your address has changed. That could
No,
cause problems.
it's just true. Also, we had like I was working with a law firm where one of the partners left, and we had to take the partner's name off. And I talked to Darren Shaw, who's one of the experts in local search, and he said, make sure you change everything everywhere else first before you try to change your business profile, because they may reject it or they may not take it. So we changed it in every directory, everywhere there was a listing, anywhere you could find it. And in this case, they're also talking about if your address was originally hidden or a PO box or virtual office. Google may not understand that you're changing to a real one, or, a real address. This is an article in Search Engine Land, by the way. So you want to, if you're having any issues, you're about to change your address, you probably should look at this article because there's a whole lot of scenarios they give and how to address them.
And for what it's worth, this happens because Google's job is to verify stuff before it publishes the information.
Yeah,
It's not
exactly.
trying to screw you over or trying to like penalize you for making a change that is a logical change that happens to businesses all the time. It's quote unquote screwing you over because it needs to verify that what you're saying is in fact true. So what Christine said, anywhere it could verify, change it there first.
Yes, and also read this article because it talks about everything from moving across state lines to going from virtual to real, from so all these conditions in here that you should check out to make sure you know what you're doing before you do it. Do not change your Google Business Profile unless you're 100% sure you know what you are doing, because you can completely screw yourself up.
Okay, so Google's expanded its review guidelines. It's warning of manual actions if you mess around with product or usage or human review guidelines. Google wants authentic human insights. That's important as a recommendation. It's also important, again, for Google's mission of verification. Yes, this product really does what it says it does because all these humans over here are saying it does. If it's a whole bunch of bots saying this product does what it says it does, Google's not verifying anything. So it gets nothing out of that experience, neither do its users, and they just get spammed. So it's introduced three new prohibitions on review content. It's about authenticity. And again, if you screw with it, you may see some bans. One of them, don't include fake or undisclosed incentivized reviews on your page or in your structured data markup.
Yeah, the structured data markup is the big one. I know there's a lot of controversy. Do they ever use it? Yes, they do use structured data markup definitely for certain things. And since reviews show in search results 100% as a rich snippet, you want to make sure you're not violating the guidelines in any way here. Because once you lose it, getting it back is so hard.
Okay, so this is a search engine journal piece. Again, a number of different prohibitions on reviewed content. Don't break them. You has to be a genuine experience, or they don't want anything to do with it. And if you exchange a benefit for it, money, discounts, vouchers, or even free products, and it's not disclosed, then you're violating a rule. You can give somebody a free product to review that product, but you gotta say you gave them a free product to review. Or the review has to say, I received a free product for this review.
Yes, 100%. Always in. Make sure they're authentic. It's the biggest thing you can do.
Eligible advertisers will soon be able to apply for select policy certifications directly within Google Ad accounts. This could be like social casino games, submitting an application so you could use copyright content. What else do we have here? Like, how does this affect? Social casino game certification requests. Christine? Okay, this great silence you heard is me trying to look up this story. This is a so Google's rolling out in-account certification applications. Advertisers will be able to let people again certify themselves directly within the Google Ad accounts. Existing social casino game certifications are going to remain valid. See, I'm sorry, I don't even understand this story. Probably have to have a conversation with
Weird
Christine when
one.
she gets back.
I'm here. Look up, look up.
I just got stuck with dead air
Where?
on a story that I'm not sure I understand or how it's even. Anyway. Social casino game certifications. What are we talking about here?
Just that they can do policy certifications within their Google Ad accounts on these type of ads.
Okay. If you want
Yep.
your punters to be certified, they can get certified within the Google account.
Yep, that's pretty much it. Just say.
Okay.
I imagine.
Sorry, I really hate online gambling, but okay, they can get certified inside of the advertisement environment itself.
Yes.
Google Maps didn't turn off OpenTable reservations. That was just a rumor.
Yes, it just appeared that it happened. It did not actually happen, which is good because they use them all the time here in Vegas.
Don't uninstall and reinstall Google and YouTube Shopify apps.
Yeah, this is a weird one. Yeah.
Even if the API is screwing up on you, I imagine there's a bunch of records attached to your app, and if you nuke it, you nuke those records. Google's working on it, and they're going to fix something.
Yeah, basically, that's the extent of the story. It's based on the merchant API and the content API, merchant API. If they're not updating, don't do something like uninstall and reinstall the apps, which is a common fix for apps that don't seem to be working, but don't do it here, or you'll have a mess to deal with.
Okay. Google Merchant Center wants merchants to get more out of their analytics and I don't know, a user reach out experience, user understanding of their users. So they're adding more AI features, an AI summary for insights gained from Merchant Center, search box with suggested queries, and a section for previous chats you may have had with the AI.
Yep, and an AI summary for insights from the system search and roundtable. And then just some quick fast stories. Bing tests fading out related searches on hover just seems weird. You hover over it and the related searches go away. You take the hover off with your mouse or hand and then come back. Seem weird, but it's a thing. It's not crazy. You're not crazy if it disappears.
Okay.
Bing tests image section in shopping panel. So now they have a section of images in the shopping panel. Again, if it pops up, nothing weird going on. It just is a new interface they're testing. Bing tests open site links, buttons, and search. So instead of just a link, there's an actual button, like the pill buttons. And Google AI mode and ChatGPT are testing bottom card citations. So citations in the bottom part of the overview and ChatGPT both do the same thing. So more citations, always good for sites. So, and then our final story, which I just loved, I thought that was cute. It's 404 Media. It's did you know this was a thing? I didn't even know it was a thing, but it's
A marching play about dislike of AI?
no, the Summer of Lud. It's the
Oh,
Summer of
okay.
Lud. So in New York, there's tech backlash is a real thing. It's a trend we've been reporting on. You know, Gen Z doesn't want thing a lot to do with tech right now, definitely not AI. Lots of people are distrusting AI as opposed to approving of it a year ago. And so now there it was the Summer of Lud, 4th of July weekend in New York City. People went out and did they donned pointy hats and danced in the streets chanting anti-big tech slogans. They're called the Luddite gnomes, people in colorful pointy homemade hats. It was a march as well, as Jim was saying. I thought it was interesting. I am technically what they call a modern day Luddite, a neo Luddite, which is not people are originally Luddites. I'm sure Jim can chime in here, who knows probably more about it than I do. But the original Luddites weren't anti-tech; they were just anti the dehumanization of the workforce in tech, using tech. So like they would jam up the automatic sewing machines or the weavers,
This
whereas
is at the
now.
beginning of the Industrial Revolution, so there wasn't really a
Yeah.
framework about being anti-tech. This was a whole
Right.
wave of stuff that was being introduced that separated the worker from the work. And so weavers, for instance, were immediately unemployed because there was machines that would do the weaving for them. Pretty much every industry that relied on human hands that could be automated, made into machines at the beginning of the steam industrial revolution, was done so, displacing a crap ton of workers. They had all just moved off the land, had been moved into the city 20 years previously to get these factories up and running before they were automated. And so that kind of pissed off a generation of people, again, who had been uprooted, taken away from one means of economic support, and then had the rug pulled out from them with the new means of economic support. And their reaction to it was, in some cases quite violent. They destroyed the machines because the machines were destroying them. A lot of that's happening today with young people. They've been fed a diet of, we're making the stuff that's not only going to do the thinking for you, it's going to take your job away and all the purpose that, we set out for people. Oh, by the way, that massive student loan you have, well, sucker, sorry about that. So they're kind of pissed, much like people were at the dawn of the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, the interesting thing though is this is a whole article about like following the Summer of Lud in New York by the journalist at 404 Media. As he said that it'd be easy to be cynical and for them to be cynical, but most of the events that he went to during the Summer of Lud were joyful events.
Of course, yeah, for sure. Humans like that.
And he said that it's very, people have to read the article. There's a lot of detail in here that we just can't go over right now. But I just thought it was a just kind of a nice piece to end on.
Yeah,
Basically, what's that?
for years I was part of when I was much younger, I was part of the peace and environmental movements. And we would have these massive demonstrations talking about, our fears of nuclear Armageddon, or well, what's happening right now with the Anthropocene, the massive effects of global warming. We were warning about this like years and years and years ago. And while we were talking about apocalyptic stuff, we were dancing in the streets and really enjoying each other's company and getting hope and support from each other. And I imagine that the modern Luddites are doing much the same thing. But unfortunately, as I learned as a peace and environmental activist, I I really hope that they build ne lifelong networks that sustain them from these movements.
Well, I think it's interesting in the case this one isn't necessarily this one is not necessarily trying to work outside of tech, but push back against tech. So he said, the author, it's tempting to compare the spectacle to something from the days of Occupy Wall Street, but what the sets the summer of Lud apart from one might expect of a Luddite protest is the lack of cynicism and an overwhelming abundance of anarchic joy. Far from the distorted caricature of Luddites as curmudgeonly puritanical tiskers, the new Luddites attract people to their movement through playfulness and participation. Instead of shaming others for too much screen time, these public events, these are all free, by the way, to make their points for them, demonstrating organically and in real time that the indispensable tech we've organized our lives around is not so indispensable after all, which is more their message, is that you can meet people in real life, you can do things in real life, you can touch grass, you can be analog, and you're still going to have tech as part of your life, but it is not the indispensable must be, must see, must be a part of everything kind of circumstance. So I just think it's a fascinating little subculture. It might turn into a big culture given everything that's going on with the AI data centers that we've reported on and the other things we reported on today. So,
Maybe,
yeah.
but yeah, maybe we'll see. We will honestly see. The
Yeah.
I got a feeling economics is going to have a lot more impact on the trajectory of the AI companies, their big plans, as we understood them last year, are not going to come to fruition. The money isn't there. It's just not going to be there, no matter how much you take from every living American. The money still will not be there. And that's the last resource right now is the people themselves, and so they are actively doing that, but the money won't be there. It's
No,
not
I
enough. You need
agree.
to keep
Yeah.
throwing in, and Margaret Thatcher had a saying that I think that the Trump regime and some of the AI oligarchs or tech oligarchs might want to listen to. Socialism is wonderful when you're understand you're spending other people's money. Because that's kind of what's happening with the AI dream. And I don't think it's the Luddites that are going to take it down. I think it's themselves that are going to take it down.
Oh, I
Because they've
agree.
got
Yeah.
expectations that are just not satiable.
And in a story we'll be covering for this week, because we time traveled to Monday, and I'm not going to get into it now, but there is more circular financing that is very much concerning people.
The Enron
More.
thing, right? The Enron dodge, the one I was talking about an hour
Yeah.
ago. Yeah, that's a fun story. I'd love this one. But we
Yeah,
can't talk
yeah.
about that now. We got to
No, we
talk about
can't
that
talk because
next
we
week.
traveled into the future, which is actually in 3 days.
Yeah, and we're very far in the past because we've gone around full clock a couple, and then some. We got to get out of here. On behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. You've been listening to Webcology that was supposed to have been recorded on Thursday, July the 23rd, but it ended up being recorded on Monday, July the 27th for numerous reasons, all of them real good. On behalf of Christine, this is Jim. Be good to each other, be kind to each other, be patient. Rank well, do all the right things on your website. SEO is still the way into the mind's eye of every computer user, at least 90% of them out there. Keep on doing it. We love you, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.